are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anti, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Kojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Sing a song. from the places of God where we met thee, lest our hearts drunk with the wine of the world forget thee.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
You know, it must have been cold standing there in my shadow. You never had the sunlight on your face. But you know, you were content to let me shine while you even walked a few steps behind. And I was the one with all the glory while you were the one behind me with all that strength. Just a face without a name, but I never even once heard you complain.
are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anti, Brother Kwasi Craig, and Brother Quojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome, Sankofa Council, and welcome to our listening audience. We have another discussion. We have a conversation that we want everybody to participate in. We want to support our Black leadership all over the country, and especially in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we're filling most powerful positions in leadership in our community. This evening, our guest, our honored guest, is Chairman Spencer, City Attorney for the City of Milwaukee. And we're going to begin that conversation in a minute. Right now, we're going to hear from Sister Ante about the purpose of Sankofa Council and also our ancestral profile.
Good evening, Brother Quojo.
Good evening.
And good evening to our guests and our listening audience. The purpose of Sankofa Council is to use African principles to unify and cooperate to create a healing environment for our community. By one way of doing that is by providing this communication through this broadcast and providing information to bring awareness to assist in our need to unify and cooperate with each other in order to bring about that healing environment for our community. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and continue with the ancestral profile?
Yes, please.
Okay. Our ancestral profile for this evening is Harold Washington. Harold Washington was the first African-American mayor of Chicago, Illinois. He was born on April 15, 1922, to Roy Washington, a lawyer, Methodist minister, and one of the first Black precinct captains in Chicago. Washington's mother, Bertha Washington, was a well-known singer in the city. Washington attended segregated public schools, including the newly completed Usabo High School, where he set records as a track star. Despite that success, Washington dropped out of high school at the end of his junior year and worked in a meatpacking plant until his father helped him obtain a job at the U.S. Treasury office in Chicago. There he met Dorothy Finch, his future wife. The couple married in 1941 when Washington was 19 and Dorothy was 17. They divorced 10 years later. In 1942, Washington was drafted into the U.S. Army and sent overseas as a part of a segregated unit in the Air Force Engineers, then part of the U.S. Army. Washington served 3 years in the South Pacific and rose to the rank of first sergeant. After leaving the Army in 1945, Washington returned to Chicago and received his BA from Roosevelt University in 1949. He earned a JD from the Northwestern University's School of Law in 1952, where he was the only African American in his class. Washington was admitted to the Illinois Bar and began practicing law in Chicago. He also served in the City Corporation Counsel's office as an assistant prosecutor from 1954 to 1958. Beginning in 1960, he served for 4 years as an arbitrator for the Illinois State Industrial Commission. Although Washington had worked for Third Ward boss and former Olympic athlete Ralph Metcalf since 1951, he became a candidate for the office for the first time in 1965, winning a seat in the Illinois House of Representatives, where he served until his election to the state Senate in 1976. Although a protege of Metcalf, who was part of the political machine of Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley, Washington occasionally challenged the machine. For example, in the late 1960s, he supported Renault Robinson, a black police officer who founded the Afro-American Patrolmen's League to protest discrimination against black officers and police brutality. In a special election held in 1977 to determine the successor of Chicago Mayor Richard Daley, who had recently died, Washington finished third in a field of four contenders for the Democratic nomination. In March 1980, Washington won the Democratic primary over incumbent Congressman Bennett Stewart and ran unopposed in the general election. There he fought against deep cuts in social programs and amendments to the Voting Rights Act that would discourage African Americans from voting. On January 3, 1981, Washington became a member of the 97th Congress as the Democrat of Illinois. He served the Committee on the Education and Labor, the Committee on Government Operation, and the Judiciary Committee. Washington supported student aid, employment training, and child nutrition programs with his seat on the Judiciary Committee. He focused on the extension of the enforcement sections of the 1965 Voters Rights Act. Shortly after his election to Congress in 1982, Washington began his second campaign for mayor of Chicago. He won the hotly contested Democratic nomination in February 1983 against incumbent Mayor James Byrne and Richard M. Daley, the son of the late mayor. Normally, the Democratic nominee for the office of mayor receives token opposition from the Republican Party, but Washington's primary victory over the Democratic political machine led to much of the organization supporting Bernard Epton, the GOP candidate in the general election. After an unusually contentious campaign that attracted national attention, Washington won the office of mayor on April 12, 1983. On April 30th, Washington resigned his seat in the House of Representatives as he was sworn in as the mayor of Chicago. Much of Washington's first term in office was marred by conflicts with the Chicago City Council, still controlled by the political machine, which blocked much of his reform agenda. Consequently, Washington often vetoed legislation passed by the 50-person City Council. He also forged a coalition of reform-minded African American, Latino, and white aldermen. In 1986, when Washington's supporters won a one-vote majority in the City Council, his legislative agenda was finally considered. On February 24, 1987, Harold Washington again defeated Jane Byrne to win the Democratic nomination for mayor. The Democratic machine, weakened by deflections to Washington and political corruption scandals did not challenge Washington's re-election, and he easily won the general election in November. On November 25th, 9 months after his primary win, which guaranteed a second term, Harold Washington had a heart attack in his office and died at the age of 65. Harold Washington, the first African American to be the 51st mayor of Chicago, Illinois, through many struggles and persecution, standing and working for the betterment of African Americans in the state of Illinois and the United States, providing a lasting example of perseverance for African Americans in this country. May he rest in peace. Ashe.
Ashe, ashe.
Now, as we return to the evening broadcast, if you have a comment or a question that you would like to share, please email us at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. Now, please mute your phones if you're on the caller line. Our speakers are very sensitive and will pick up all background noises, talking and the like. So mute now, and please be sure to unmute when it's your turn to talk. Thank you so much. Back to this exciting topic we have this evening. Brother Crojo?
Yes, thank you so much for the purpose of Sankofa, which means that in order for us to move forward effectively in the future, we need to capture our legacy that brought us where we are now. We need to go back and capture the wisdom of our ancestors and use that wisdom to move forward for new possibilities in the future. And also, inspiring life example of Brother Harold Washington. And so, we picked that profile because we have another Black leader with us this evening. His name is Kier Spencer, someone I've known before he was born. His brother and I were grade school friends at La Follette Grade School here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And to see him in his journey from the playground pilot to in a high office, like the city attorney's office in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where prior to him being in that position, we had a city attorney been there for 50 years. 50 years during a time period when Black people in Milwaukee suffered most of the disparities, income gap, trials and tribulations, more so than any other city in the country, over incarceration, you name it. And now it's a new day. And we have Jeremy Spencer with us, who will be sharing his vision and how he plans to represent the city of Milwaukee in a way that there's equity, fairness, and integrity. And so, without any further ado, let me introduce this brother first of all. He's got a wide range, background, history. First of all, he got his bachelor's degree from the University of Southern California. And he was in safety engineering. He's got an engineering degree. A lot of people didn't know. He's got a master's degree also in business administration. And there's doctor's degree from the University of Wisconsin, right here in Madison, Wisconsin. And he has a proven capacity and experience in the area of executive leadership, he was a very effective consultant in his practice and his business and he has a proven background in entrepreneurial ability, strategic planning, environmental program development and implementation, and financial, and also employee development, resource development, critical political reasons. And he has a work ground that includes having a loft that emphasizes this, and he's a former law for Evers and Associates, and he has background as a volunteer in disability and employment rights. He was an advocate for disability and employment rights, and he worked as project manager and director of environmental health and safety as an engineer, and a program manager for OSHA consultation program. And he was consulting in precision engineering. There are a few more things, but I think you get a gist. This brother has a wide range background in the law engineering. And that's who we have in our city office right now. Brother Tierman, are you with us? You know, we're working.
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you. I can't see you, but I can hear you. And all of us are working remotely. So I just want to make sure that that you're with us. And welcome aboard to this conversation.
Let me first begin by thanking you guys for having me. It's an honor and privilege to be here, to be among such greatness and community. So I'm just overwhelmed to be able to be here in presence with you all.
Yeah, you know, Milwaukee is unique that we got this, what they call sextuple. Sex meaning six, but you've heard of the trifecta when, you know, at the University of Whitewater, where I went to school, they won all the major, the three major sports, one year in 2016, we call it the trifecta. Well, here in Milwaukee, we got a sextuplet in offices, including the superintendent of the schools, the district attorney, the city attorney, the county executive, the sheriff department, and who else did I miss? The mayor's office.
And you missed the city treasurer.
Oh, city treasurer, Spencer Cox. I went to grade school with Spencer Cox. Yeah, well, you know, so we got, that's more than six, seven. What do you call that when seven lined up? But, you know, we want to support you in that position because here again, you know, you're coming in after 50 years of a regime that didn't appear to be making a difference in a positive way for people of color. And so here you are, you know, bringing your vision. And so, you know, I would like to know, and you can share with us, audience, what motivated you to run for city attorney's office in the first place that had that 50-year history? You were pretty bold to think you could defeat Grant Langley after having been there for 50 years, and you did so. What motivated you?
Well, you know, I complained a lot. I complained about the state of affairs in Milwaukee, you know, being raised here, growing up in Milwaukee, we've seen a different dynamic, good, bad, and indifferent in a lot of cases. But when I looked at what was going on in the city from the legal perspective, I was appalled. And, you know, I constantly complained until somebody, you know, told me, listen, you can sit back and complain or you can do something about it. So why don't you stop talking about it and do something about it? So it dawned on me, you know, if not now, then when? And I realized that we all have to get into the goings-on of the city if we are to effectuate any kind of change. So it was a calling to move, and I just thought I better, you know, get up and do something. And that's what I did.
Is this the first time you ran for office?
No. I looked at a county supervisorial seat, I think, in 10. I looked at it pretty late. I'm not sure how it was vacated, but I looked at it, and it ended up with a runoff with Biddle and myself, and a young man, Biddle, won the seat. So that was in 2010.
Wow. So what, you know, when, you know, from the sidelines looking in, you know, you appear like someone who was pretty bold and courageous to actually jump in the city attorney's race and win. I'm very impressed. You know,
I think it was a combination of many things, primarily timing. You know, I humbly think that, you know, it was a calling. I never, first of all, never set out to say, hey, I want to become a lawyer. And more so, I never set out to say, hey, I want to be city attorney. I just looked at the current affairs, and I looked at the way things were manifesting in the community, and you know, it was appalling. So I realized something had to be done. And I challenge everybody, every one of the listeners, every participant, when we see injustice and we see things not wrong, let us not just talk about it. Let us stand up and try to do something about it. It's good to be vocal, but it's even better to take action, move forward. Movement behind words goes a great deal longer and farther than just words.
Have you always been confident about anything that you set out to do? What caused you to be so confident?
Well, it goes back to La Follette. Coming up in La Follette, I'm not proud of this, but I was suspended pretty much every week for fighting. And most of the fights were not fights that I started. You know, once you win a fight, then you get a reputation, everybody want to fight you. But primarily, my fights were sticking up for someone else. I'm always trying to help the little guy, the underdog. So, you know, it just got raised. I just hated bullying. So, you know, I would fight for it. I just would fight. If someone couldn't fight for themselves, and I was able to assist, that's what I did. That's what I would do. So I didn't run from it. I went to it. Just compelled to do so. So I don't know if it's courage, as it is not wanting to stand by and watch injustice.
So now, fast forward, what, 50 years fast forward, or years fast forward, here you are, still fighting with your sword and shield in the city attorney's office.
Yeah, you know, the struggle and the fight continues, but the fight manifests differently. And I think we have to be cognizant of that and understand it. And, of course, we have to understand any battle won by an individual is a solo act. That is not a battle, and it's not a war. If we're going to prevail in any fight, you need to have the support and unity of many. You know, a solo accomplishment is just that, a solo accomplishment. You know, but when you accomplish something and it's meaningful and resonate with others, that's when you're doing something. You know, your legacy isn't measured by what you accomplish. It's those who you've helped on the way to that struggle, in that struggle, and on the way to achieving what you achieve. That's what I believe.
How long did it take after you won that victory and was elected city attorney for Milwaukee? How long did it take for you to, like, for that to kick in and realize, wow, here I am, the city attorney, and you're representing, you know, you're managing 50 or 60 or more attorneys who are doing whatever they do to fight, you know, fight on the behalf of the Milwaukee. How long did it take to kick in?
I never had an opportunity for it to kick in. It's still trying to kick in. You have to understand, when I ran, and then in the latter part of the election, I was struck with COVID for the third time. So I was gravely ill, even when it was announced that I won the race, the election. And having dealt with COVID so many times, COVID had taken the long-lasting effect on me, as they call it, long haulers. And I still suffer from the effects today. So, you know, it's been a constant struggle to try to even put things in perspective. So I never had an opportunity to say, hey, the race is over, I won this. It was seemingly, I'm into one situation after another, not ever able to get my feet stable up under me in order to even think about what had transpired. It's just a constant movement, and it's been very fluid, to say the least.
It sounds like you've had a lifetime of being resilient. Like, being resilient is a norm for you. It's like, I vaguely remember, weren't you disabled as a child for a time period?
I was disabled as an adult. I spent five years in a wheelchair, and the prognosis was I'd never be able to walk again. So, but, you know, with the all high, and we can always say, and doctors can say what they want, but if that's not the plan for you, then that's not the plan for you. So, you know, I was able to get out of the chair, to move forward, and then to go to law school. And then everything else, I think, is history. It just fell in line. It's a different story. You know, and if we have time, I'd like to share a little bit of that, if we can.
Oh, sure. In fact, you can share now.
Well, when I started having these moments of paralysis, I would collapse, you know, a great deal. I woke up one morning, and I tried to get out of bed. And I did manage to get to the floor, but I realized I had no legs. So I got back into the bed somehow, and, of course, hours later, I got feeling back in my legs. But then I started going through the moments of, you know, what's going on. So as I moved forward, trying to make a long story short, after seeking the consultation of at least 24 specialists, I was told, you know, I was told definitely that paralysis was imminent, and that's it. So, you know, I sought advice from other specialists to see what we could do, if anything could be done. And everything I received was no. You know, the best thing we could look forward to is trying to control the pain, but walking was out of the question. And now, during that same period of time, I enrolled in three different schools. I didn't want to have a moment where I could think about my problem. I wanted to move forward, I guess in a state of denial, just to keep moving. But I do recall, as I was attending one of the universities, I had collapsed in front of a clinic, and the owner of the clinic came out, picked me up off the street, brought me inside. It was a 92-year-old doctor, Dr. Dugas. And we calmly talked for about 2 hours. And he, you know, he expressed himself that, you know, he was willing to help me, but he wanted me to exhaust my remedies conservatively. And if he finds that no one could help me, then call him. So, again, long story short, I had surgery, I think, December 27th. I left the hospital January the 7th in a chair. I called him 2 weeks later. He came to the house. He brought, I don't know, $20,000-$30,000 worth of medical equipment, and he began to work on me for the next 4 years until we got movement back in the lower extremities. So after about 2 years, I got feeling back in the left side, and the next couple of years I got in the right, all but the foot. You know, he advised me to take a direction of as a marriage counselor, but I didn't. You know, I woke up one morning and excruciating pain, and I, you know, rolled myself to what was then a family room, and I turned the television on, and I saw Ironside. So in the midst of prayer, you know, I looked up and I laughed. And, you know, and I said to the Ojai, so is this what you want me to do? And the rest is history. So from then on, we move forward. And it's only by the grace of the Ojai that I am able to walk and move forward. But there's not a day in my life that I don't go through and have to deal with some remnants of pain and other issues that put me in that chair. So, but I try to stay focused. I try to stay positive, which is always a challenge and a fight, but I always try to move forward and give my all to service of others, not about me. That's how I am here today, where I am.
Wow. So that life experience, you know, going from the playground where you're taken up for your friends who are being bullied, you end up fighting, get suspended every week, and then you end up having your own battle with that physical disability and fighting through that. So you've been groomed to be someone who protects others and who stands up and advocates for people, for people you care about. And so that's what you bring into the city attorney's office. Wow.
I also realized, sir, that during those moments of suspension, I realized the concept of it takes a village has been embedded in me, because I lived up the street from school. And it seemed when I get suspended, they will call the whole block and let them know I was suspended. As I ascend the block to go home, the parent be on the porch, both sides of the street, and I had to get called over to the porch. And of course, I didn't just get a lecture. I got my butt whooped all the way home. and told, you know, your mother can't be here and you know better. And then, you know, you walk up across the street, you go again, and you, same lecture, same, you get whooped again until you get home. But it resonates then, the things that you do, and you have to be a little cognizant of it. But what impressed me the most was everyone cared. You know, everyone in the neighborhood cared. We were more than just individuals in our neighborhood. It was a family. And that concept resonated with me, and it stays with me. It stays with me today. And I think we've gotten so far away from it. We need to find a way to get back to it. We have so many generations lost because of the separation of that concept in itself. And I think it's vitally important that we try to reinvent it, reinvigorate it, and re-embrace it so that we can help those and try to help prevent many from slipping through the cracks.
Exactly. Healing happens in community. It takes a village to raise a child. And in the state of Wisconsin, where teenage children between the ages of 13 to 18, only 7% live with their biological parents. So a lot of these children are being raised by single-family moms, and many times, for various reasons, the fathers are not involved, which means parenting and socialization is missing for a lot of these children. So we do need the village to kick in. I agree. Now that, you know, you're in the position of city attorney and you have a proven track record of being able to and to be unstoppable and to overcome what you've overcome, now it appears that there's some other things that may be constraining you that you need to overcome again. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
The press, the media, looks like it's trying to give you a hard time. You have anything to say about that?
Well, you know, anytime a person upsets the status quo or what they have considered the norm become problematic, change is not always received well by many. So I think part of what we see is the fact that I have not been part of the establishment where, you know, I respect folks for spending and devoting their career to politics if that's what they want to do. I never sought out to be a politician. So the fact that I ascended to the office created a problem, you know, and the press that we talk about and those articles, that particular individual was very good friends of my predecessor. So I would expect nothing less than for them to do what they're doing, and the narrative that they present, I would expect nothing less of that. You know, that's every time things present itself like their norm would be shifted, you have to do something or feel the need to find a way to get back to that normalization or that thinking. And I understand, I get it. I harbor no ill will towards someone wanting to continue in a direction. Like, and I understand, they should harbor no ill will to me wanting to change, you know, wanting inclusion, wanting justice. But I get it. They do. And that's how it's going to always be. But I'm going to have to continue to try to move forward the best I can with a concept of inclusion for all, not separatism, because I don't think we're going to be able to accomplish anything by being separate. We're going to have to be together on this movement. And there's so many folks that have traditionally fallen by the wayside. We have a great population of elderly now, you know, the majority of the population. And unfortunately, they are the subject and subjected to most of the inequity now, not just because of sheer numbers, but because of the... Was that a cue to stop, or?
No, I think someone needs to mute their telephone. That was inadvertent. Sorry about that. Okay. Go ahead.
And I think it's important that we focus on, again, that same population of those, of all, really, but those who can't help themselves. You know, folks that lived a life and contributed as much as they could throughout their adult working life, and find themselves now in a situation where they have to make decisions. Can I afford my medication, or can I afford to pay certain bills? I think we have to be a little more sensitive to their needs and a little more understanding. So I bring that compassion to the job. And first and foremost, we have to understand the city attorney's job is to defend the city.
Would you please, someone needs to mute their phone. Dr. James, are you able to mute whoever phone is ringing during this discussion? Can you mute them? Continue.
I think it's important for us to understand how important it is to help those within the parameters that are set. The dynamics of the city is such that the job is to move the city forward, to make sure that we do all that we can to defend the decisions and policies of the city and what we do. So if there happen to be irregularities or issues that are, you know, of our control that we see, and from my office, then those are the issues that we try to make just. We try to fix along the way. But by no means in imagination do we forget our mission and where we have to go. But there's nothing that says we can't be compassionate as we move in that direction. And I think compassion is very important when we look at the situations that folks are encountering.
You know, Sister Ante had a question early in the week when we met, our organization met, and Copeland met, and her question to me, because we were discussing having you be our guest, and I know Sister Ante is going to, she's not going to like me calling her out, but her question was, but what could the city attorney do for me? So, Sister Ante, can you, said you want to ask Brother Spencer what he can do for you as a city attorney?
I agree. Yes, that's the question. What, as a citizen of Milwaukee, what does the city, how does the city attorney's office affect me?
Okay, I'm glad it's rephrased that way. When we say what can you do for me, I always think, as a child, when I heard Kennedy say, "It's not what you, what your nation can do for you, but what you can do for your nation," and those are the ideas and principles we need to always think about. But now, with respect to the sister, the job of the city attorney and the city attorney's office mission, touch and concern every aspect of your life, unless, of course, you are a sovereign nation. And I don't believe you have your own sovereignty. And if you do, you know, I humbly apologize. But as a citizen of the community, you pay taxes. You live somewhere. If you drive, you drive up the streets. If you hit a pothole, those are actions that you would encounter and have to deal with the city attorney. And, you know, if you speed, there are ordinances and laws that you need to follow. You know, if you break them, you got to deal with us. So pretty much every aspect of your life, this office kind of touch and concern from a perspective of you living in the city. You know, so from whether it's your taxes, it's where you live, you know, the condition of how you live, those aspects you're going to deal with in the office sometime or another. And how often we say, well, you know, you can't do anything for me because your office don't affect me. But on the contrary, you know, if you ever have an issue, whether it's legitimate or not legitimate, where you find that now your house is being foreclosed on because someone said you didn't pay your taxes, and if you did, you know. I don't know where we're going with the show tonight, but kind of sounds like I'm being interviewed by Milwaukee Journal with the noises.
Well, you may, maybe we got a troll. Maybe we got a troll on the line who's trying to.
Yeah.
But please continue.
I'm sure. But yeah, so we have to understand all of these offices in the city can pretty much deal with you and affect your life from one way or another, directly or indirectly. And the city attorney's office deal with all of the agencies, so we have more of an opportunity to touch and concern your life from numerous different aspects. So,
okay, may I ask another question in that direction, Dan?
Yes.
Is it okay?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. You know what? We're at the 6:55 point where you would normally do the you know, our sponsor. We have to pay the bills. Why don't you ask the question and then I answer that? Would you go ahead and bring on sponsor?
Okay, I have to do. Okay, our sponsor is EDOC Advice. EDOC Advice is a website created to provide a place to get answers to your health and medical concerns. Are you wanting more options than you feel you're getting? Let EDOC Advice help you to problem solve. Go to the website and ask your question. Their experienced professionals will help you to obtain the help you need that makes sense to you. They do not replace your health professional or provide you care, but they can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. They network with other professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. That's EDOC Advice at EDOC.com. EDOC Advice. Thank you.
Okay, now we got a couple of minutes to get that question in, if you want to, before we go to the top of the hour.
Okay. In the beginning, you said that you recognized the injustices and was the reason for you running. And I'm interested in knowing what the city attorney's office, how can the city attorney, what were those injustices that you saw, and how does the city attorney office address those, either if they were specifically maybe towards the African American community or just citizens of Milwaukee, or including citizens of all citizens of Milwaukee?
Well, let me just dissect one example. I don't want to talk about all things that we are working on and we deal with, but let's just talk about one policy. We have a city with a dire need for infrastructure improvement. Let's just say you are an automobile owner and you happen to drive and your car hit a pothole. You know, you ask yourself, where do you take that up with? Do I not pay taxes? Do I not have a right to drive in the city free of these potholes to damage my car? And those answers should be yes. And then the question becomes, well, how do I remedy that? But when you look at the policies, how they're structured, it will appear to be a little unfair. For example, in order to deal with that issue, you hit a pothole. Policies say that you have to notify the department in advance of the pothole, 48 hours, if I'm not mistaken, prior to having the damage to your car, in order for them to, you know, look at it and deal with that from that perspective. But now let's think about that. If I have to notify you that my car is going to hit a pothole 48 hours in advance, or there's a pothole, you need to fix it. Typically, we don't know that pothole exists until we hit it. So now, let's just fast forward and say, okay, I know there's a pothole. Now, I reported, hey, there's a pothole on the street that I'm driving, and I do that 48 hours in advance. What do you think happens if you hit the pothole? So now you hit the pothole. Now you want to make a complaint. You want reimbursement for the damage to your vehicle. Now the position is, well, you knew about the pothole, so why didn't you avoid it? I mean, we have issues like that, and we have policies like that that could probably be readdressed and could probably be looked at in a different manner to try to work through. But, you know, there are a number of policies that we now don't talk about. Because, again, we have the city, and my job is to make sure that we uphold and defend those policies. But when I feel and see some of those policies that I think can be improved or need change, then it's incumbent upon us to bring it to the bodies that make those changes. You know, let the voice be heard, and it's up to them to write their policies. But things of that nature are some of the things that we have to look at, and we have to look at the fairness about it, or the justice, or the lack thereof justice, and see how it can be remedied.
That was a great example, and thanks for walking through that, because damage to a car could be in the thousands of dollars when you hit a pothole. Listen, we're at the top of the hour right now, and we're going to have a little break, station break, and then we'll come back in a few minutes, and we'll open up the line for people to call in.
Finley Medical Clinic. We serve uninsured, underinsured, and insured individuals. Open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Urgent care clinic Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call for an appointment at 414-988-3079. Finley Medical Clinic is accepting new patients. Vaccines and screenings for uninsured, underinsured, and insured. Located at 10721 West Capitol Drive, Suite 110. Call our office for an appointment today at 414-988-3079.
Listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast, where the host is Dr. Janine James, Sister Ipua Ma'at, Sister Osati Anti, Brother Kwasi Crabb, and Brother Quojo Robinson. The Sankofa Council of Milwaukee Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank Network, and it broadcasts on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Contact them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're going to open up the lines for call-ins. I'm sure there are people out there in the listening audience who want to chime in to this discussion and give Brother Tierman some support. Or if you have questions about the city attorney's office, you know, please call in and ask.
Well, we do have listeners, and I see Sydney from Heartland. Sydney, you have a question or a comment for Attorney Spencer? Sydney from Heartland? Okay, how about 334-414?
Good evening, Dr. James, and good evening, elders. The question that I have with regards to your city attorney there, and although I'm not a member of the area proper, but I'm just curious, are there any relationships between your office and law enforcement, and what is that like at all, the relationship between your office and those guys?
Okay, well, law enforcement is an entity, a department of the city, and the city attorney's office has the mission of defending all agencies within the city and their employees. Ergo, the police department and law enforcement is our client as well. They become a client of the city attorney's office. The city attorney's office and law practice is a practice of municipal law. To civil practice. And civil, of the understanding, there's two areas of law. There's criminal, and then there's other. So all other will be civil. So from a civil perspective, we support and defend the actions and duties of our clients.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Yes, sir.
That's what I meant when I mentioned he's carrying a sword and a shield.
Yes.
You know, he's defending the department, you know, underneath the umbrella of the city. And then at the same time, the police department, you know, that's his client too.
Yes.
That's why it's important to have someone
he cares about black lives, you know, black lives in that position, because ultimately it would be the city attorney who would choose whether or not, you know, something's legal to, you know, to defend. You know, like if a police officer is disrespecting the rights and the resources of citizens, and they file a complaint with the Fire and Police Commission, that Fire and Police Commission has to consult with the city attorney's office.
Okay.
And that's Chairman Spencer right there. In the past, for example, and I know from my own experience, in a period of 30 years, there had only been two complaints by citizens that prevailed before the Fire and Police Commission. People don't even file complaints because they don't even see the possibility. For 50 years under the other regime, they would never win.
Okay.
Police officers would blatantly tear up the complaint right there in the district station office. To file a complaint, they'd tear it up right in front of your face. So now you have someone who can enforce the city's laws and ordinances with his sword and shield.
So, if I may, let's take an example of something that just occurred. Lady called, she owned the house, was married 20 some odd years ago, divorced, and a decree that the husband kept the house. So she figures all done and said, wipe her hands from it. So recently she tried to go purchase a home, only to find out that there was a $6,000 or $7,000 bill outstanding in her name to a property that she did not own. And it held up her being able to purchase another property. So when you in the 11th hour and you don't know where to go, and it was no mistake of hers, but she dealt with this problem for months and months before she was able to get it resolved. So once it did get to my attention, we were able to do the research, find out where the error occurred, and fix it in record time, so that she was still able to go purchase her home. But these are the kind of things that sometimes don't get fixed, you know, short of you pay it and you deal with it. And we have to understand that, you know, the concept of law, you pay now and grieve later. But sometimes you're not in a position to do that. So we were able to get to the records, and then no fault of her own, we were able to track down what had occurred and fix it. So these kind of things that we take for granted sometimes and say that they're little, or we'd like to mark them as de minimis, they become great grade for some folks. If that's standing in the way of you trying to get a home for your family. So I'm not saying that they weren't dealt with in the past. But what I am saying is this is not an anomaly of things that comes in. But in order for us to be able to resolve and rectify those things, we have to know about them. So when they do come across the desk, they get the full attention of the city attorney's office. And it's not just issues like that. It's all issues that span what our community encounters.
Now, a great number of your city attorneys have, like after you got elected, a lot of them resigned. Based on what I heard in the, you know, in the media. And so now you're bringing in new people who may see things a little differently from, you know, past practice. And if you're dealing with managers and supervisors in those various departments who are used to doing things a particular way, and now you're bringing in someone who has a different way of looking at life, that's going to create some problems, isn't it?
To say the least. Yes, those are issues that do occur, and I strongly suspect will occur. But let me begin by saying that I'm very optimistic about the group of new attorneys we're getting. They're fine attorneys, and I think they have a place to have longevity and great careers. So like everything, when there's a shift of philosophy in the way of doing business, it's a slight paradigm shift, if you will, they have to get worked through. And unfortunately, everyone don't see it like that. But we are in a position that we call the balls and strikes. That's it. I don't try to persuade you which way to go. I just often tell you what the law is and what is right. Now, like any other client, you know, we can give you a recommendation that doesn't necessitate you going to follow it. But, you know, our job is to make sure that we give you the recommendation and interpret what the law is and the meaning. That's what we do.
All right.
Thank you.
That satisfied your question.
Yes, thank you. We've got a call here from 505-340. 505-340. Do you have a question or comment for us?
No. Good show. I'm just listening, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
We've got Mark from Milwaukee. Mark, you got a question for our guest? Mark from Milwaukee? Okay, we have several members of the Sankofa Council who are with us today, and Sister Sarta had her question. We had kind of a lively discussion prior to today's program, and we usually do discuss what our concerns are, what direction we'd like to take this, and I'm going to take the opportunity, Attorney Spencer, to share with you. This is a group of elders we've seen a lot. I'm from Chicago, so as we were telling the story about Harold Washington, it really rang home to me as the first Black mayor to Chicago, because it really made some changes, not coming directly from Mayor Washington, but there was a change in the attitude in the business community, which for me led to the opportunity to receive higher training in medicine that I might not have otherwise had. And in fact, my chairman said, well, I guess this is a new day here and we've got a Black mayor, and I'm going to be willing to bring in some Black trainees. And that for me was the beginning of my career, and just that having that Black mayor made a difference. And so our discussion here is not specifically related to Milwaukee and its elected complement of Black politicians, but it does give us an opportunity to not only hear from you, and I would say somewhat representative of the Black politicians, of what plans you have that are going to make a difference in this city. And I think that message may be helpful as we look at some of the other cities who have will have a complement of Black leadership. And also for this community and our communities to learn from you what it is that we need to be looking out for, what we can do to be supportive, because we do know that there are factors that can come in to attempt to discredit you as well as to try to make you ineffective. And so we need to know from you what it is that your discussions, I hope, with the other Black leaders within
the city have begun to have some conversations to say, how do you support one another, as well as how do you go to the community and let them know what it is that you need from them to support you?
It's a great deal just said. And let us let me just digress for a second. Something that you had mentioned with respect to Harold Washington and his ability to move policies forward, you had mentioned that he was able to get one vote more in the council in order to move forward. So let us understand the dynamics of politics. Here, we have an administration and we have a council, and then we have these other African-American leaders. But again, council manages the finance of the city. And if you want anything done, you have to get the votes through council. And currently, there are not a majority of votes that lean to certain issues of concern that resonate through our community. So when we start talking about what's going to get done and what should get done, we need to have a clear understanding of how it gets done and understand without the requisite numbers in council, nothing moves forward. So what can the community do? You elect the council people. You know, it's not just to sit back and say, hey, I'm going to give you a vote. Sometimes you have to stand up and say, I'm going to serve. Sometimes you have to look at that. And if we never change the dynamics or the structure of the council, it's going to stay the same. The outcome is going to pretty much stay the same. And you see that living in Wisconsin, going on the Hill, you have Governor Evers, but then again, who direct and make policy for the state of Wisconsin? So, you know, we have to first understand and how to put things in perspective and then ask ourselves, what is it that we can do, you know, and then look in the mirror, and it comes very easy. Simple math, you know. If you have a 15-member council, and you have 6 or 7 African Americans, that's not to say that you can get a vote, but it takes a great deal of lobbying. And if your position on whatever the issue is does not comport with the other council people, it goes nowhere. So we have to understand that. And we have to understand it's numbers. It takes numbers to make changes. So sometimes we elect somebody in office. We've seen it so clearly when President Obama was president, how he could never get anything through Senate. But then, too, you know, we dismiss those things, and we have expectations of certain folks we elect. It's wonderful we elect them. It's wonderful. And they need all the support that they can get from the community. And then the community have to understand the dynamics and see what they can do to get the people that they want in office voted. But without the support, you know, you're preaching to the choir, you're fighting a battle fought by a solo artist. You can only do so much if you don't have the support. So support is needed. And with support, you have to have numbers. And you have to have a unified team. You can't move forward if you have internal strife. You have separate agendas, you know, so you have to first understand the dynamics of the organization and how you move forward and try to get to that. And of course, you have to reach out or extend olive branches to try to cross aisles, as they say, to try to get things done. It's give and take. But clearly, if something is going to affect what has been done for years and years and folks don't want that change, just merely elected someone, they're not going to make that change occur. You need to have the votes to make those changes occur. So you can see a lot of little changes made, but we have to understand and not try to be so critical and so hard on our elected officials when we don't understand the dynamics of what they can and cannot do. So often we prejudge, and so often we talk about, well, you should have done this and that. And they do as best they can with what they have. So until the community elect all the people in the offices, this is what we have. And we have a couple of offices that will be coming available. We have an election coming up again. We need to be mindful of that. in an interim, we need to try to, you know, work best we can with every member of the council to get things done. Try to find a point of interest that satisfies everyone instead of just a single group. Always try to find areas where we can meet in the middle and move forward, move agendas forward. But if we're going to go in with separate ideas and wanting separate things, it's not going to work. Don't have the numbers to make any of those changes. Just does not happen. It will not happen. So diplomacy and understanding how to use a diplomacy and finding good people willing to listen and make those changes, hey, not going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, we live in probably one of the most segregated cities in the country. It's been one or two ever since I've known this. And was it Cleveland, a place in Ohio, you know, that's been tag teaming one, two, historically. And we have to understand, when people get voted into office, they're voted in by their constituents. And the constituents drive the ideology that they thrust forward. So sometimes you look at the politician, whether he believes in what he's pushing forward or not is a different thing. You know, he has to deal with his constituents and he moved their agenda forward. That's what they voted for the betterment of the city as a whole. So we have to understand the dynamics. We have to really understand the dynamics and how the maps are drawn and how they affect everyone. And we have to find commonalities and how we can move forward for the betterment of everyone and try to make that happen. So you ask, what can I say, or what can I ask? I ask that we become more cognizant of what it takes, have a better understanding, and then ask yourself, what can I do to help? You know, understanding that it takes votes, understanding that when an elected official stand up on an issue, that issue is heard with all the support of the voices of those behind him articulating that position. If he's articulating that position by himself, you know, that issue falls on deaf ears. It does not get the action that it will get if it was supported by a number of people. So you get things done with numbers. So the community have to galvanize, come together and unify on these issues in order to move them forward. People listen. They listen and they understand. They understand the importance of what it takes to get voted in the office. And they understand who voted them in the office. But if we can't unify,
is democracy is participatory. And just because we elect someone doesn't mean that, you know, that's all we need to do. We need to hold those elected officials accountable. And we need to support them and let them know. The people need to provide leadership because politicians are not leaders, contrary to a lot of people's thoughts about, you know, what politicians do. They're not the leaders. The people inform the politicians how to best represent them. And if we're not involved, if we're not participatory, then democracy is not going to work.
Absolutely. So profoundly said. I totally and 150% agree with that. And I tell you, I have had the opportunity to interact with some of our elected officials, and for the most part, they mean well, you know, and they try to get it done. But I think one of the biggest things that's missing is that support from the community.
Now, I was thinking, you know, about the possibility of having, kind of like in Congress, you have the Black Congressional Congress, you know, a group of, you know, Black Congress people who come together. They form an organization. Now, I'm not suggesting that Black people in high offices in Milwaukee form an organization, but at least come together to look at some of the issues, because many of the disparities and gaps, income gap, informality, you name it, incarceration rates, we own you know, those disparities and those gaps right here in Milwaukee. Is there anything, I mean, is it possible for all of the high-ranking black politicians to come together and maybe look at what's missing, what's working, what's not working, and strategize on how to put what's missing where it's missing so that we don't keep having these disparities? Like, is that a possibility?
Well, sir, everything's possible and anything's possible. How practical it is, what it'll take to make that happen, I don't know what that looks like. Again, I'll try to feel optimistic. And again, there's a possibility, you know. But then it's not going to be done by one person. This is going to be a mission of the people. Then the people should articulate this is what they want to see. You know, they need to demand that folks get together.
That's right. You guys work for us, don't you?
Absolutely.
I like what Brother Quojo is presenting, which makes me wonder, though, each of you are in your positions now, and what I'm not hearing is that you all have met to begin to develop what the agenda needs to be to make the city all that it can be. And so you've got enough folks from different areas of city operation to be able to come together over lunch, dinner, whatever, and say, okay, what do we need to support one another? What are the weaknesses that we're finding in one other's department? Or, well, it's not really a department, but how do we need to support one another to move forward? So that's I like that idea that Brother Quojo has brought up, and I appreciate your response. And I would like to we have some members of the council. I saw Brother Kwasi here, but I'm not seeing him here now. So I'm going to ask for 414-276, 414-276. Do you have a comment or question for Attorney Spencer? And I see Queen Mother Shabaka, who's here. Queen Mother, you have something for us? Because I know you were very instrumental in us having today's program. And do you have some points you'd like to share today? How about Sydney and Heartland? Sydney and Heartland? We called on you earlier, but I don't know if you were unmuted. Sydney, do you have something to share with us today?
So while we solicit some comments, let me say that you say you don't hear about said meetings taking place. I will tell you there are a number of meetings with the elected officials in their capacities. Extending their support and trying to help. That occurred. But for the most part, there's so much to do. And that's not an excuse. But, you know, we have a new chief of police. And I'll tell you from what I'm looking at, he's not sitting on his hands. He's busy. He's busy. Yeah, he's working. And I'd have to say that of all of them. You know, I meet with them. They're working. They're busy. But have I been invited to a coalition for everyone? No. Have conversations of that nature been expounded? Yes. Have they been engaged in? Yes. There have been some movement. And it have not just been conversations about just the black officials, African-American officials coming together, some of the issues surrounding the community and the problems of the community, reaching out. It's bringing those to the table who have concerns and try to figure out a way to get in control of some of these issues, primarily centered around some of the crime. So I can say that I do know for a fact that conversation have ensued about getting chief of police, the sheriff, the DA, you know, the mayor, even the president of MTA, Milwaukee Police Association, city attorney, all these officials together, and try to sit at the table and address some of the issues and how they collaborate on trying to move that forward. But again, trying to coordinate that is not just a simple thing.
And you know, our organization could make a request, or
absolutely,
maybe like the African American Roundtable, which is a very informed, organized advocacy group of younger people. And since you guys work for us, we could actually make that request.
Absolutely.
Listen, Dr. James, except it's time for a sponsor message.
Okay. Mother Sarta?
Sponsors are welcome. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Send us an email at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. Support the program that is working for you by bringing to you information you will not hear elsewhere that you need to know. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to PayPal, sankofa_think@outlook.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Queen Mother, are you going to talk to us today?
Good evening. Every time I find the mute button, I've lost my chance. But I do want to say I appreciate this lesson from our guest on how the city works, because so often we don't consider all the levels of involvement of our elected officials, as well as their limitations. And it kind of, as I was listening to you describe what your responsibility is, it seemed to me that we elect people who are representing the city, and it seems like they don't really represent us. So can you comment on that?
Yes, it goes past electing. Got to do more than just cast a vote for a person. When you see a person standing up and pushing agendas forward, and you see that official constantly being attacked, you know, it's incumbent upon you to say, hey, look, we elected him. You need to, or her. You need to stop that. But in absence of that, they continue to do it, and it diminishes that voice of that person. So, again, you elect people, but it must go past just electing them. You must also vocalize that support for them. So, I mean, I see them standing up and I see them fighting. But how much fight can they get when they're in a room talking about this is what we want, this is what my folks want, my constituents, and there are no constituents there to support it? And then they are constantly being attacked, and where are the constituents saying, hey, stop that? You know, time out. Now, you know, we know better. You know, we sit down and we buy into the rhetoric and we let it go on. And then we turn around and say, well, they're being ineffective. No, we're being ineffective. When we cast a vote, casting that vote is to put that person in that place based upon what they said they're going to stand up for and fight for, but then it doesn't stop there. When they're out there, they still need to have you there. You know, how long do you think that they can stand up and fight without having nourishment? And nourishment is in the sense of support. You can only do so much. So until we become a little more accountable for our role, it becomes disappointing to everyone because we're not getting what we want and we're not realizing why we're not getting what we want. So, you know, I ask and I ask all of those who are listening and all of those who cast their vote, don't stop with just casting your vote. You know, speak to your elected official and ask them, what can we do to help? And, you know, it's not always about, hey, give me a donation or give me money. But, of course, you know, that goes a long way. But I'll tell you, without money, they can't move anywhere. But I do know some elected official, I'll speak for myself, I've never asked a dollar from any of my constituents. You know, but do I ask for the support? Yeah. Do I get it? It doesn't appear that I get it. It appears a lot of times that I hear quiet noise. Oh, yeah, you're doing our bidding. You're fighting for us. But now when I'm being attacked, where is the support? And I'll tell you unequivocally, I am not going to go out and do some stupid stuff that's going to affect what I'm standing up and fighting for. So you have my pledge. That's not going to happen. I didn't sign up for this for glory or to sake the sake of I'm the city attorney. No. No. I spend my money for the fight so that it couldn't be said that, you know, I got in here trying to do and wanting to be all this or that. Absolutely not. But it does become disheartening when I see that I'm constantly fighting and I don't see the numbers of folks there in support. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a great deal of people there supporting me. I'm very vocal about it. And I'm thankful for them being in. I'm thankful for them. But, I just want to admonish us and say, before we become so important, let's be a little more understanding. And let's ask, what can we do? What can we do to help? What's our role?
It sounds like we need to get back to that village you described early on in the radio program when you talked about how
absolutely, you know,
because if we don't have a village or some social order, there's no way for us to reach a consensus about what we need.
That's so true. I wanted
to ask if in the city attorney office, you mentioned some policies, some ordinances, I guess they're called in the city. Is that what they call laws?
Yeah, but
about when you talk about the potholes. And that was example of laws that are ridiculous, that were probably put in place a long time ago by people who, I don't know, who maybe potholes weren't even that prevalent then. I don't know what the circumstances were. But my question is there a component of your department that examines laws to find contradictions in them, because they come up all the time?
We do that all the time when we are asked for an opinion. You know, we opine on whether a question that's being presented is legal or not. That's what we do. But again, I stated earlier, just because we give you an opinion doesn't mean you have to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any other lawyer, you can tell your client, you know, murder is illegal, you shouldn't do it, but some clients do it. You can tell them what the consequences are, but sometimes it falls on deaf ears, and unfortunately.
Keep in mind, agencies are the departments that he consults for. Those are his clients, city attorney's clients. In the past, we didn't have access to a lot of the leadership in those offices. But now, perhaps, things are going to be different. You know, it's a new day.
Let me say this. I know it may appear that some of what I'm saying or not saying is a little vague, and that's for a reason. Sometimes it's practical to be vague because what you don't say can't be used against you. And here is the real unfortunate part. It's really unfortunate that you don't know who is really on your team. You know, you have people that say that they are, but you know, historically, the downfall of most of our leaders has been because of betrayal. And betrayal is alive and real, and we need to understand that. So sometimes, you know, you can't put certain things out because they will be interpreted and construed a certain kind of way that could prove to be detrimental to us trying to move forward. So please understand that as well. It's not like things are not getting done. Sometimes some conversations are best not held in an open forum, you know, so they could be dissected, passed on, and then attacked and eliminated. You know, so you have to really understand and know who you're talking to and before you openly talk about things. You know, I think since the inception of Facebook, some folks said something about social media and your relationships should be kept within and not placed on social media. Same thing with certain issues. You know, if you're trying to move forward, you should try to move forward with the collective group that can make those changes and movement that you know are not going to come into the room with their separate agenda and try to derail what's trying to get done. But unfortunately, the reality of it is that's not always the case.
All right, thank you for that answer.
I see one caller here, 414-243.
Yes, good afternoon. How's everybody doing?
We're good. We're glad to hear you.
I'm very glad to hear you too, and you too, Brother Oshie and Dr. Rogers as well, and Attorney Tim Spencer. Attorney Spencer, I understand that you've submitted several press releases to the press to interact and communicate about some of the things that the dispersions that they've cast against you, as well as to talk about a lot of the accomplishments that you've achieved since you've been in the office with no response. But they continue to write these disparaging things about you. Could you explain to us some of the achievements, if it won't hurt anything, that you have accomplished since you've been in the office? It would be greatly appreciated. I think the people really need to know the things that you have accomplished. That's what they support, the things that you have accomplished while you have been in the office.
So thank you, sir. It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice. You know, I've been very reluctant to do that for a number of reasons. And, you know, my philosophy is, you know, what a person don't know, they can't use against you. And then suddenly things change. But let me just mention one thing. I came into office, and one of the first things that I had to deal with was the death of Seville Smith. And the issue surrounding that was issues surrounding qualified immunity. And I was very vocal in expressing, you know, my position regarding qualified immunity. And it should not just be afforded to people who wake up in the morning and decide that they're going to go out and commit crimes, or for whatever reason. So since that time, I'll tell you, and prior thereto, that public position, we have had issues of wrongful death previous years prior to me getting in the office.
and with no stop, no halt, you know, as if folks figure they whatever they do, they get away with. But since that time, and since me standing up in court, you know, I've been accused of not defending certain people and been ridiculed and brought up on charges and et cetera. But one fact is, since that position, our mothers in the community have not lost any of their children to excessive force and the wrongful actions of the officers. But of course, this is one of the things that are not discussed. You know, we want to talk about fabricated things, in which I'm going to try to stay away from. But understand, there are changes, and there are very meaningful actions and reactions from certain positions. But that in itself, you know, for a mother to say, you know, I haven't lost a child, we haven't heard about a child getting murdered or shot or having issues of serious excessive force. Where are the conversations around that? Absolutely none. But the problem becomes when you stand up on certain issues to make certain changes, and it's not made by certain other people, it becomes problematic. So how do we tarnish someone's image, their reputation? How do we destroy that when they're trying to fight for a whole community? You know, so that's what we've been seeing. And I just have to say that it's indicative of the mentality of the city that we live in. And anyone that's been here, they know what it is. But I ask to just resonate on that briefly, on just that one thing. But we continue to move forward. There's been some historic achievements out of our office. Listen, there have never in the history of the city attorney's office been an African-American female deputy. We have two. We are turning the corner, making all types of historic changes, but because they're not popular with other folks, the paradigm has to get shifted, issues have to get spent, and we have to always talk about negative things that don't really exist. So I thank you for the opportunity to respond briefly to that. And again, I don't like to get in depth with it because, again, and my feeling is, come next week, that's going to change. Now somebody's going to go out and try to do something, you know, just to make me wrong. And I hate to think that, but I have no other reason to think otherwise. But, you know, I have faith in people. I have faith in community. And I think as long as we put community first and togetherness first, I think we'll prevail, because I believe when we help one, we help us all. And it shouldn't be so divisive of saying that it's only about one race or one group of people. We should be moving the yardstick forward for everyone. And we need to be trying to find a way to find what we have in common and focus on the commonalities and not try to focus on what separates us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Do we still have a show?
Yes. Yes, we do. I think maybe you have gotten people thinking here a minute.
Now, I muted myself. I was talking and nobody heard me because I muted myself. I was listening to the last answer. Yeah, I was just saying that Brother Tierman has been groomed by his past and his experiences, and what he has access to is the wisdom of our ancestors, our legacy, and he also has a vision for what's possible for the future. And his resiliency, which is his natural way of being. So I'm sure he'll be able to weather the storm that the media is providing. And now it's time to close out. So any last words for anybody before we close out?
I want to say I appreciate the format and these talk shows, these blog talk radio shows, Black Reality Think Tank, Time for Awakening. They mean so much. And oftentimes, when a lot of things are going on, there's not enough of us running to the shows when the shows are reaching out to us. I think we should be coming to the shows more often and utilizing them for our own purposes. Because,
we appreciate your calling in. You know, and I wish we would have more callers call in. Our listeners are a little shy, but I'm so glad that you were able to chime in and be involved in the conversation. And right now, I want to thank Dr. William Rogers and the production staff and San Cope Council, and also thank our guest for giving us his valuable time and wisdom and sharing this vision for the future for the office of city attorney here in Milwaukee. And we look forward to bringing you more programs in the future. So visit our sponsor, www.edocadvice.com, and the Finley Medical Clinic. So we're going to say good night and stay safe. The Sankofa Council, the family, Sankofa family, and all of you, good night until we meet again next Saturday. Lights on.